January 15, 2024, so off for Pedro's show. For Pedro's show, happy Monday. It's January.
Start off John Coltrane with a private jam in Detroit. Just an excerpt, 1958. I think Joe Brazil, who ended up, you know, found in his attic that tape of Love Supreme live in Seattle. I think he's on the flute on Ohm, a penny whistle or something. Anyway, after that, Jay Wilms featuring Ike Grassi on the piano with Interruptions number one. Because it wasn't the only interruption. And because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me Jeremy Wells. Welcome aboard, Jeremy.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Absolute. Right off the bat, we give credit for the connect, Howard Wolfen. The Howlin'
Wolf.
Right. Right. Okay. I want to learn about your journey through music. Very interesting stuff you sent me. So let's try to go all the way back. Your earliest musical recollection, please, Jeremy.
My dad's nylon string guitar in his office and probably like a Paul Simon record. Maybe it was Simon and Garfunkel or something like that on the turntable. I don't know how old I was, but it was in the outskirts of Miami in the 70s.
So, I'm assuming the pad you grew up in, there was at least one musical instrument, or was that guitar always stay in your pop's office?
He was an amateur musician through college, high school and college. He had a band, like an instrumental kind of surf rock band in Jersey in the 50s. But he didn't pursue it as a career. He didn't have enough confidence. There were several guitars around. My sister played piano for a while, or knock around on the piano.
There was a piano there then too. See, the point is why I asked you. I mean, very interesting about your father's non-career, but I was wondering if you jumped on any of that shit.
Always.
Yes. What was the first record, Jeremy, you bought with your own money?
I'm pretty sure it was Foreigner 4.
What was the first gig you saw?
First gig I saw and that I remember, my dad took me to a lot of stuff, but I remember seeing George Benson at the Sunrise Amphitheater in Miami. Maybe I was 6 or something like that. I don't know. It was the Breezin' tour.
Let me ask you about school. Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
None of it. None of it. I don't, it's like a huge gap. When I was in high school, there was a really subpar jazz band in my high school, and I played guitar and bass in that for a couple of years, but that was it.
Now, had you already started trying the guitar? Did you take lessons?
Yeah, well, I started by just going to my dad's room and picking it up and trying to, like, make it sound like something. And then when we moved to Atlanta when I was 12, I took some rudimentary bass. I wanted to play bass.
So whoa! What was that about?
I don't know. I think I knew that if I was...
No, I'm way into it. Don't get me wrong.
I thought if I was ever going to work at it, I needed to play bass, not guitar.
Okay, and you were a young man still. You were earlier than Watt with that. I didn't know what the fuck a bass. Well, you know, arena rock, sort of like that George Benson gig. They probably were really tiny, right? It's hard to tell what a bass was. Looks like a guitar.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Didn't know it really meant lower. First gig I saw was T Rex. Me and D Boone were 15 years old.
Wow.
Where they taped those Don Kirshner's Long Beach Auditorium. They tore it down for the Long Beach Opera House. But some of that around. You see Don Kirshner. He's the guy who invented the monkeys, right?
But
anyway, not to get off the point. So what was your first bass?
I think I had some kind of Japanese, like, Westone or something like that, you know? It was like, or like a Hondo or one of those things that was popping around in the 80s.
Did you take lessons? Or did you try copying stuff off record? I mean, how'd you get into learning it?
I took a few lessons. My dad showed me some stuff, and none of it stuck. I was terrible. And then I just kind of batted around on it until I was 14 and met some other kids that were... you know, the metalheads in my local high school that were...
I was going to ask you about that, like after school, not graduating, but in the afternoon, the bedroom band, garage band, basement band.
All of it.
Right.
Yeah, man. And basically, I didn't know what I was doing, but I saw what they were doing, and they didn't know much more than me, and I was like, oh, as soon as I saw someone doing it, it kind of clicked.
Okay. And it was probably at the drummer's house, right?
It was at the drummer's house. At first, it was just guitars, two guitarists and me, and then it always wound up being at the drummer's house in the basement, for sure. Ryan Armstrong was his name. I'll never forget that dude.
Whoa. I lived next to a dude in the Navy housing here when I came, Pedro, from Virginia. He was David Armstrong. And I won't forget him either. You know, it's been many years, but I can remember. He used to like hock loogies all the time. In fact, he'd come visit you. You'd have to have the front hatch open because he'd be fucking spitting all the time. And he didn't chew tobacco or anything. He just liked spitting. Cleared his throat or some shit.
Great personality trait to be known for.
Absolutely. By the way, bass man from Atlanta just came to mind. Jeff Pincus.
Who is that?
Butthole Surfers.
They
had several bass players, but he was he's the guy, the Hairway to Steven cat on the cover.
Okay, right. Okay.
Eyeballs and a weird kind of pigtail. Okay, so did this band, first off, the material, were you trying to copy songs off records like me and D-Bone?
Yeah, absolutely. It was probably not nowhere near as cool as anything you or D-Bone ever did, but we were doing, you know.
We were pretty terrible.
Yeah, we were doing, like, a whole lot of love for, like, 45 minutes over and over again, you know?
Yeah, we did that with American Woman.
Yeah, there you go.
Man, like, hours at a time, the same part over and over. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
I remember one time, because it was at D. Boone's pad, and it was in the Proj, with the older Proj. I was in the newer Proj. I had to move out of the Navy housing. But the next-door neighbor lady said to D. Boone's, Ma, how can you handle that noise? And she goes, well, at least I know where my son is.
Yeah.
So
man.
That's where we figured, kind of child care. That's why she wanted us to have a band. There's no career move, especially in 1970. That's okay, brilliant. Okay. So does this band ever write anything? Does it ever play a gig?
We kind of played a gig. I can't remember if it was the original drummer. There's another drummer whose first name was Brett, who I can't remember, who is actually a good drummer that came in. And then we got a name, and we got a singer who was older. And that's when we shifted more into, like, U2 and kind of maybe some early REM covers and stuff like that. And we played one gig that we rented a community center in a public park. And we played with another band in the suburbs that was a way more, like, interesting, cool punk band called Dead Fish. And... And they were a little bit older than us, and basically it was supposed to be, you know, like kids with some, you know, parent supervisions. There were no parents, and there was lots of underage drinking, and we got busted by the cops.
Oh, man.
That was the first gig, and I think we played one other gig after that.
Okay. And what was the name of the band?
The name of the band was Pink Camouflage.
That's a good one. Okay, so Pink Camouflage. You would, even with the... Hombres busting everybody. Was that a gig, first one, a success?
It was a success for me because I was 14. Everyone was older than me. I was like the youngest kid, and I think I switched to guitar by then because I got better at guitar quicker than everybody else. I could actually play the, like, you know, melodies or whatever, like the higher guitar parts, not just the power chords. And, yeah, so it was a success for me because it turned me on. That was it. I knew, like, after that first gig, you know, I knew that was it for me. I was in.
Beautiful. You gave me this tune here, Double Double. Let's listen. Thank you.
Thank you. waiting, and I'm walking on quicksand. Try to do a headstand, put on your hot pants. Let's do a best dance, and the things you take for granted will become enchanted. In my broken dream, something's gone wrong with me. In the early morning, it's all we were. Wish it was late one. I'm losing sight. Think I just might take a breath. Sanity, allow myself some vanity. Paper cut, clear and clean. Doesn't always have to mean that it's the time to worry. You don't have to hurry. Maybe
for Pedro Shaw, Chunky Music. Start off with Jeremy Wilms doing Double Double. After that, Plaza, brand new. The real Mr. Hot Dog. Real in parentheses, Pete. For emphasis. Or maybe kind of subtle. Yeah. Urinals after that. This is from on the 5th. What's that? About 10 days ago. Got to play with them in their version of Little John and Jewel at the Smell downtown. It's Jim's 26th. Anniversary for that, Pat. And, yeah, a lot of old friends there. Wharton Tears after that with Cloud of Dust, New York City. Credo, April 22nd, 2022, sorry. With Padre, your eyes, what? Restro. Ungodly, brand new. Crypt, Disturbia, Dialogue. This is live at the Eugene Difficult Music Ensemble New Music Fest 2023, Day 3, composed by Heather Gilligan, performed by the Eugene Difficult Music Ensemble. Cube after that with At Large, Thomas Prendon, Heavy Metal Microphone, Sheer Accident, Death Ha, finally Ray Shin, no, not finally, Ray Shin Words and Edgewise, then finally, Jay Wilms, not Jeremy Wilms, people. Jay Wilms with Langerice?
I think that's right.
Yeah, looks like a little German there. Okay, so you say this band only lasted 2 gigs. Where does your music journey lead you?
Yeah, so at that point, that's when I kind of got serious about maybe learning something. And so I sought out a real teacher. And, I started to learn how to read music, a little more about chords, a little more about, you know, melodies and all that kind of stuff, and decided I wanted to study music. So I kind of introverted, like, a little bit from the time I was maybe 16 to 18 or 19 and just kind of did, because I had a lot of catching up to do, I felt. You know, I felt like I had sort of skipped a lot of stuff in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. So you had to seek knowledge.
Exactly.
Right. And does that, besides, you know, going to a teacher and learning stuff like theory and stuff, did you get in some more bands?
I eventually got in some bands once I got into college. I backtrack on that. Even in that time, I was in a couple bands. I had switched high schools a bunch, and I got in a couple bands in the suburban town that I was in. One was kind of like a sort of straight edge punk band that I didn't make it in. I wasn't punk enough or straight edge enough. I'm not sure what I wasn't, but I wasn't something. And they wound up going on and having some regional success. They were called Active Faith. They were from my
high school. I remember those cats.
Yeah, and so the singer in that band was this guy, Robbie. The original singer is a guy, Robbie Fuller, from my high school. This awesome guy, San Jose, races like vintage Datsuns and restores them nowadays. Like one of the coolest cats ever. You know,
just
he's the best, man. And he and I and one other guy had kind of like a sort of folk punk duo where we did sort of like Bob Dylan covers, but like more aggressively. And then also he wrote a lot of poetry and lyrics, and that was called No Marching Parades. Very earnest, a very earnest and sincere band.
You know, who's been doing acoustic punk is Kevin Seconds.
Oh yeah. I need to check that out.
You know, and Billy Bragg for a long time from England. I mean, this idea that punk's got to be one thing, that's kind of crazy. Like you were saying, not straight edge, or you know, because like the bottom line is no coercion, right? Anarchy, but so, yeah, maybe it's too hard to do.
Yeah, I know. I think when I was getting into it, like the Minutemen and Meat Puppets and all that, Husker Du, all that stuff was like every band was totally different, you know.
That was the idea, right?
Yeah, that was the idea, and then. You know, even by the time I was getting out of high school, that there became sort of a little bit more of like a codified thing. Although in Atlanta, there were a lot of weirdos doing awesome stuff.
Well, hopefully there always is. But Jeremy, man, always remember when you're thinking about this kind of stuff, Pat Boone sold more Tutti Frutti's than Little Richard. I mean, what the fuck is that about? That was in the 50s, right? So it ain't really a new thing of humans co-opting things and other humans being like herd animals but you know what a farmer would tell you, if you want a good crop, use a lot of manure. You know? I say, bring it, motherfuckers. Okay, so you were doing this stuff, and then did you go to a music college or did you take some music classes out of college?
I went to State University, Georgia State, and I did major in music ultimately, and I kind of minored in psychology. Probably should have done it the other way around career wise, but you know, it is working out in some way. But so I studied, I studied at Georgia State, did kind of the jazz studies thing down there. It was just starting out at that time because that was sort of a new thing, like jazz in school. Got super disillusioned, dropped out for a little while.
You know what? That school had a good radio station, though, right?
It has RAS.
Yeah.
88.5. I'm talking about
the old days more. I remember they let the Minutemen play for a couple hours when we were doing some gigs with REM at the Fox Theater.
Yep. I think I saw you guys there.
Stars in the overhead. Well, lights, but they looked like stars in the overhead, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's still there. Still looks the same.
I remember one night we did, like, because they did a Creedence song. And, you know, when I met D. Boone, the only rock band he knew was Creedence. So we did five of them, and like four or five different managers yelled at us, and don't you ever do that again. They ended up firing all those guys and shit. But they were, we had no idea about, they were very cool people, but the organization around them was a real bunch of, ugh.
Oh,
I understand,
man,
why the movement came about. But I just remember, John at the station, and they're very cool people. You know, REM was responsible for kind of getting punk on the college radio, because before them, it was people wanting to be like, you know, corporate punk. You know, I'd call up for SST, and they'd be playing like what you saw, Journey. And so they're playing at the college station, you know, and then... things changed around when REM started coming around. So you dropped out of school, but you're still what were you doing music-wise, band-wise?
So at that point, I kind of had a couple of bands of my own with people that I'd met.
Oh, wow, your own band. Okay, so you write material?
Yeah, I was writing material that was kind of like, again, a sort of edgier kind of take on jazz at that point, like trying to put a little bit of a rougher edge on it. And then I fell in with a group that was sort of doing that in maybe even a more aggressive way called Gold Sparkle Band, which is kind of they're still sort of around, they've kind of scattered, but they were like a Ornette meets, you know, I don't know, the Melvins or something. And and yeah, so it was like kind of like free jazz, like trumpet, saxophone, electric bass. I think they had two saxes at the beginning and a really explosive drummer who's also in a band called the Melts down here, which is a great, great heavy band back in the day. And so I kind of fell in with them, and then we started with that band was kind of where I got to where I was like playing in different places more, like my first kind of taste with touring and, you know, and that kind of thing was with the Gold Sparkle Band. And
were they big tours or like regional?
Well, but we would do, it was all East Coast stuff. So Okay. We would like drive around to like, you know, Nashville, Knoxville, maybe Memphis, maybe hit some kind of small place in Alabama or something, like go down to Savannah, that kind of thing. But then we would also like fly up to New York and then go like New York, Boston, Philly kind of vibe, maybe D.C., I think.
I-95 tour.
What's that?
Yeah, I-95 tour.
100% I-95. So it was like that was the gist of that band. But through that is when I kind of made a few more connections up in New York. And, you know, kind of broaden my horizons and stop being in the practice room.
Yeah, you know, well, people ask me about the old days. I say it was about people. And I say, hey, new days are about people, too. It's always going to be, I think. So the connects, I think, are important. Like you said, it got you out of the prac room.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, really interesting. And especially New York City, because a lot of people, they're from somewhere else. They come there. It's a magnet just drawing people that's got energy to get shit going.
Yeah, man. 100. Yeah, I was just talking about that with someone. It's like, it's been very positive, and it can also be very overwhelming.
Yeah, well, yeah, stops. Absolutely. I can imagine living there. But there is something special about it that's different. Jeremy, we're at the first hour, end of the first hour, January 15, 2024, Dish Watch Pedro Show. Special guest, Jeremy Wills, hold tight for hour two. January 15, 2024, it's the second hour of the Watch for Pete Rose Show.
Thank you. overlooked so many things through the years, through my tears, through the years that I went over my eyes. You were my idea, heaven with open arms. Now that I found myself this long, I think it is best we build our little nest. Yes, it's best, here's the rest. I've overlooked so many things through the years, through my tears, through the years that I went over my eyes. You were my idea, heaven with open arms. Now that I found myself this once, I think that it is best we build our little nest. Yes, it's best, here's the rest. I won't stop and think of the things I really couldn't do until I met you. Please, Daddy, listen to my plea. Understand my love and you will find it true love. I want you to know just how I feel right from the start. Hope that you feel the same. I've never had that slightest doubt and hope I never will. I pray our love will blossom with each thrill. I hope you feel the same. Oh, please, Daddy, don't let me linger. Open up your soul, open up your heart for me alone. Then I know I'll find a way to complain. I love you, the thought of you. You're the only one I've wanted since I have met you. And I need you every moment, darling. Stay by my side. I know I'm meant to find true love, dear. I vow you'll never leave me once I have you. I'll never know the song of bluebirds sing when it's lonely. Well, it had to be, can't you see? I did used to wonder. You could love me, tell me, do you? For it is true, dear, there's no other but you. There I went and said it all over again. The way you made me love you is a sin, but what can I do?
Watch for Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with Chin Chin, Gigi and the Boys.
It's the tune.
Ben Salter out of Tasmania after that with Blackwater Brigands. Tony Oxley, great drummer man, adventurous. We lost him, but he's playing all the way up, all his years. Composition number one, Julie Christian with Billy's Bounce after that. Barry Stott, Man in the Growing Gloom. And finally, Danton Boiler. No, Baller, I'm sorry. Or Bowler, probably.
That's right.
Danton Boiler with Blue and Green. So, you know, Chin Chin, in Italy, that's how you like cheers, right, when you're doing a toast. But oh, right. Chin Chin in Japan, it's fucking katsu, it's a dick.
You got it.
Ah, you know, okay.
That's hence the name of that band.
Okay. great. So where do these cats come? How's this in the Jeremy Wilms timeline?
Oh yeah, okay. So that's like after my college thing down here and a little bit of hanging out and playing. I went to New York, and some of the very first people I met were these two brothers, Torbett and Wilder Schwartz, and they had this band, Chin Chin, and they kind of like enlisted me to play bass in it, actually. And so we put a few records out and had some success in the Netherlands and France, of all places.
Overseas, so you start playing overseas. And are you using that same bass, that Hondo?
Oh, no. By that time, I think I bought the floor model, like Manny's Music, like $400.
48th Street.
Yeah.
No, that shit's gone now, Jeremy. It's all gone.
I know. It's sad, man. It's sadness. Yeah, I bought the floor model Fender Jazz Bass, just the one that had been beaten to crap by everybody, and I still have it. I dragged it on tour for many years without a case because I didn't have enough money to buy a good case, so I would just carry it in whatever car I was in, kind of vibe. But yeah, so that band, we did that, and I think that was like the second or third record. And
now it's like you join in a band, or did you write for them?
We were like
you collaborated?
Yeah, they kind of enlisted me, and I became part of the band. They were already going, but they had they were at the beginning and had people coming and going, and I kind of came in, and Tada Hirano, who's a guy that was in, I think he was in Chibamato for a while. And maybe Blonde Redhead, too. He was playing guitar.
There's an Italian-Japan cross thing.
Exactly.
They and all two met brothers, like, too.
Yeah, exactly. And they all met, I think that band all met in, like, a class. They had to get a visa, they all had to take, like, a foreign language, like English as a foreign language class or something, so they could all have a visa, and that's the legend I heard. Yeah, that's the legend I heard. That's how it's called.
And what about this Danton Boiler?
Boiler. He's a, top call New York kind of jazz bass player, but he does all kinds of stuff. And this is so off and on. He and I have been, first we just were friends, not even playing.
Yeah, how'd you meet him?
I met him through a guy named Nick Demopoulos, who's also known as Smomid. He's kind of like an instrument maker, like crazy, another crazy New York cat. And I was like subbing for Danton on Nick's gigs. And then Danton and I just became friends without ever playing music. And then eventually Danton sort of helped me out on some jobs that I had where I needed a bass player.
Yeah.
And and we just became, we became very good friends and played music together. And, he's in a different, the guy was in Roy Hargrove's band. He's in a different
I got to say, Jeremy, this is my hope. We get to the point where music's music and fuck this genre shit.
Exactly.
It's like, Chow, do we really get particular? It's either tasting good or it ain't. What do we, I only eat this kind of rice-a-roni or some shit. I mean, it's just crazy. It's a marketing scam, man. Right? Us guys doing it, we learn that music is music. So why can't you be doing different kind of styles and learning from other cats?
Amen, man. Amen to that.
Yeah, I don't mean to get on the soapbox, but damn, I get pissed.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. This guy though, that, yeah. So he made a record, and I just wanted to have it played out there because it's some of the most, like, talking about exactly about that. Like, yeah, it's probably in a bin somewhere as a jazz record, but if you listen to that tune, it's like not really. I mean, it's just something else. It's just music that he's making. So anyway, yeah, that's how I know him. I've known him for.
You know, gave me this tune here. Las Horas, Christina Rosenvinga.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Let's play it.
Cuida. be better than it looks. Judged by its cover, it'll often be mistook. I'll start tomorrow to write a book. In the meantime, I'm still here. Watch the hands of fate make their moves. Am I best? Put my mettle to the test. Make every moment better than all the rest. I'll start tomorrow to be my best. I'm gonna always treat you right. Better days.
Pedro Show, a chunk of music started with Christina Rosenving with Las Auras, and then Sunken Lanes, Graham out of England with his new project, Adre, super nice guys out of Berlin, Masa on bass, great bass man, number 9's the tune, Reg Bluer, used to be Glenn Branca partner, in fact she kind of put the whole thing together, the Symphony 13 I was part of. And I think she's playing in SoCal soon. And this is from her new record. And a soft little tune called Explosive Fragmentation. J.D. Pincus and Tall, Tall Trees. He lives in North Carolina now, in the west part. And this is, and he's playing banjo. You know, started off on banjo and became a good bass was Chris Kirkwood. Meat Puppets, yeah. EY's Demise is the name of the tune. And finally, Jay Wilms, I'll Start Tomorrow. First, I got to ask, is there a difference between Jay Wilms and Jeremy Wilms?
Yeah, it's total debacle, and kids don't do this. I, like, try to separate all the instrumental stuff I do from the songwriter stuff, and once you do that on the evil major platforms, Spotify, blah blah blah. Like on Bandcamp, it's all together, but on the big evil places, it's like separated, and you can't kind of undone what you did at that point. So Jay Wilms is kind of like the songwriter stuff, and Jeremy Wilms is more of the like instrumental kind of experimental.
Okay, thank you for getting that clear with me. Now, hit me to Christina.
Yeah, again in New York, met Christina Rosenthal. Actually met Christina through Steve Shelley, which...
Ah, drummer man.
Yeah, drummer man, which, quick aside, while on tour with Christina one time, I met you. We were staying in the same hotel, face-to-face met you, at the Primavera Festival in Barcelona. I don't remember.
Oh, wow.
Year.
Okay.
Yeah, early 2000s.
I was helping the Stooges.
Yes, you were, and I saw that, and it was good. Well done. Very helpful.
I love that band. I love those cats.
Yeah,
miss
man.
Them much. Miss them much. But, okay, so you met her there.
I met her in New York. They were kind of doing the thing that Steve was doing with his label where he had a bunch of different singers.
Oh, like, Smells Like Records.
Smells Like, yeah. And so we did this thing where there was a tour. He had like three or four different singers, I think four. And Steve and I were like the bass and drum rhythm section for all of them. So we did like, you know, probably a year's worth of touring with that. And then Christina and I really like connected on some songwriter stuff. So that song, Las Horas, is a collaboration. Like I don't even remember. I think Steve's playing on it. I know at least for one demo I made, I played all the instruments and sent it to her and she wrote, but then I think we re-recorded it. So I think that version is like a band version, not a one dude in a room.
No, actually Steve Shelley crossed the river at Hoboken, but I did record with them when they had Sonic, you've had that Murray Street studio with Mr. Rourke.
I was around.
Okay, this tune that I've got asked to do is a Jim Joyce tune, and I wrote it as a waltz in 3/4. And I don't think Sonic Youth did a lot of waltzes because it took Steve Shelley about 250 takes. But he didn't give up, even though Jim O'Rourke was about to pop. But it came out real good. I just loved the way Steve Shelley was like, you know what, I'm going to get this. Yeah, okay, the rolls are coming out too short or too long because I don't have much practice with this, but I'm not going to let it get me, and I'm going to keep at it. And it was like, you know, try to pull away the chew toy from the puppy, you know, and but Jim O'Rourke, I could see the steam coming out the ears.
I know of which you speak because I was a fly on the wall in that studio quite a bit at that time.
Yeah, in summer. It was all sweaty and shit.
Yeah,
but
man.
It turned out really good. Really good. It was way worth the effort. Yeah. Cool. Sometimes you got to have a little patience. Jeremy, we're at the end of the second hour, January 15, 2024 edition of Wap Pedro Show. Special guest, Jeremy Wilms. Hold tight, Vox 3. January 15, 2024. It's the third hour of the Wap for Pedro Show.
Been traveling along this dusty highway, not knowing where to go. Then I came upon you. You were going my way, but you didn't really know. And all at once, everything ignited in the distance. Trepidation and resistance. We wandered carefree through the Delphic forest, contented just to be. Then the wood got dark. Somehow I lost you, or maybe you lost me. And at some point, I found that I've been lost in my decisions. Which changed but the same. And it took me this long to realize you're the key. May all your dreams serve as a reminder of who you are. May all the roads take you where you're going, but not too far. May all your dreams serve as a reminder of who you are.
I'm Thank you. once made love to the most beautiful of all lonely women in the world. Like a dream, it seemed so real, and like a fire it burned. Like a storybook, the last page is torn. You never find out how it ends. Like a dream that dies waiting to be born. You know it may not come again.
Pedro Show, we start off the third hour. Jeremy Wilms doing All the Roads. And there's a lot of them, people. Then we had Asher Gayrig Morrison with What Hope Do We Have? Probably should have a question mark, huh? This is from this benefit compilation, Welcome to Gaza. Walter Camel did something for it, too, Pledge Allegiance. And then finally, Tim Flosion with Once. You know, he was on the show, and he, $2 guitar, right, with Steve Shelley. God, small world.
Yep, that's my Howard connection, is through Tim.
Okay. Tim's really good people. I was on the show, it was just beautiful, I loved it.
Yeah, great
and,
dude.
And I got to play some, I mean, no bass, but I'll cut him some slack. No, they were a good band. I think that was probably Steve Shelley's first band after being a Sonic Youther, the new guy, right, for 25 years. Before that, he was a Crucifuck in Midland, Michigan or something?
That's correct, which is also where Tim is from. They knew
that's right, that was the connect.
High school, so. Yeah. Yep.
And that's why the, what was it called, Velvet Goldmine thing with Ronnie. That's why they asked Steve to be the drummer, because he was Michigan like Ronnie.
Yep.
Yeah, he got a trip. So, what's your connect with this, too? Are you playing the bass on this, Steve?
Once. So, I am playing bass, and I also did the string arrangement on the string, all the string writing on there. I wrote all that for Tim's record.
Uh-huh. And, like, All the Roads, now this would be your
singer-songwriter?
That's correct.
Persona?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, like you said, hopefully all that stuff dissolves and, you know, it can just be like this is another aspect of the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
Like, okay, Bob Dylan. He had this Rolling Thunder review. He had Mick Ronson in that band with Ramblin' Jack Elliott. Papa John Creech. I mean, whoever could get up there, right? You know? And then
yeah.
He's reworking these songs where he was man alone mode. Why not?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Singing the choruses all in the wrong places to fuck up the gig goers. It's really big deal. So, at this period, so you're kind of a utility man, helping people out?
Yeah, that period in New York, so we're talking like, you know, mid-late 90s going into early 2000s. Like, yeah, man, just kind of, you know what I'm doing? I'm like, I'll take as many, anyone that'll have me, I'm there because I do not want to continue to, you know, be a weed delivery guy in Manhattan anymore, you know, which was my quote unquote straight job at the time. So yeah, so I was like, get me out of the organized crime world and into the disorganized music world.
Yeah, right.
That was the thing that was happening.
So as far as like Jeremy Wilms stuff, it was only singer songwriter. Whenever you got electric or something, it was helping somebody else.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, I mean, I was also just kind of making weird kind of instrumental sort of, you know, weird instrumental records on my own as well. You know,
well, and I was always, can I ask how you recorded them? Did you have something going on at the pad where you were living?
Yeah, I did a lot of, I had I think it was my first computer ever was some kind of like Mac G3 or G4 tower. And I had like a DigiDesign 001, you know, the like maybe 2 preamp interface or something that you ran Pro Tools off of at that time. So
you would just stack up tracks, right?
What's that?
Stack up tracks, you know, because you can only go two at a time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I went from a 4-track cassette recorder that I had and carried with me to New York. Like, I got it when I was, like, 14 or 15. I went from that to, you know, a computer and was just like, oh, my God, there's so much I can do now, you know. And so I was making a lot of kind of weird stuff on my own that didn't, some of which saw the light of day eventually and some of which didn't. And then, you know, eventually I got into kind of like a more quote-unquote pro gear situation, you know, eventually.
You gave me this tune here, Dog Whistle. Let's listen.
Thanks. That's called The Shreve, and that was written a few years ago for that gas station over on the corner of 14th Street by the Louise Bridge, Louise Turbo. Potentially written for the guy that owned it, and he doesn't own it anymore.
Thank you.
Plot for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Started a chunk off a dog whistle from Rossi Waters Wills. And we had Brian and Goblins doing American Brutality. Eugene Chadbourne. The Shreve. And finally, Cave Paintings featuring King Mono with Bouncy 3. In likeness to Cave Paintings, King Mono, Rossi, Waters. I know a little about Wilms.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go with Rossi, Waters, Wilms first. So Mick Rossi is a piano player, probably at this point most known for he was one of Philip Glass's guys for like forever, you know. But he's a freak, man. He's such a crazy awesome musician, and you know, he's playing drums on that recording. And Charles Waters is the saxophone player from the Gold Sparkle Band, which I mentioned at the beginning. Sure. That was like kind of the group I was in Atlanta, and those guys both are in New York. And before I left New York in 2019, we did a live recording at WFMU, and so that's from that.
Great station, that. Jersey City. All right.
Really strong, bro.
And then Cave Paintings.
Cave Paintings is a sort of duo I have, like a production duo I have with Torbett Schwartz, who's from that band Chinchin that I mentioned.
Right, Chinchin.
Yeah, but more known recently, kind of gone on to have a pretty decent production career. He did, you know, the All Four Run the Jewels, which is a killer Mike LP record. He was co-producer on all that. He makes beats. He produces stuff for a lot of great people. We're trying to put a record out this year that's a sort of like, you know, long form, kind of open, instrumental, stonery jam.
Is that your current jam right now?
That's kind of what I'm, that's one of a bunch of things I'm trying to pump out this year. This year I'm trying to like overcompensate for like generally kind of dismal 3 years of production on my end.
Tell me about some other stuff.
I'm working on, I'm actually working on some film music. My wife is a filmmaker, and I'm working with the Contemporary Chamber Ensemble at University of Georgia. They're all like doctoral students in performance.
Athens, when you said you were touring around regionally, you didn't mention Athens.
I left it out. That was a glaring omission, but that was definitely one of the places, you know.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, I'm going up there, and I'm writing some music for that ensemble. They're gonna play. They're amazing. It's like kind of chamberish music, but you know, keeping it weird. And
it's connected obviously to images from a film.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm gonna re-release a record I put out in 2014. It's like a 10-year thing. That's like a instrumental kind of guitar-based record called Diamond People. So I'm remixing that stuff, and I'm gonna pump it out. And then I got I'm gonna make a companion record to The Fighter, which is the record that's out now. That's sort of it's like in the same group of songs, but more like inspired by J.J. Cale's record Naturally, like very specific kind of vibe that I'm going for it. So yeah, man, I got like four or five things I'm trying to get done this year.
Well, can I put out an invite when these things come out? Because we're running out of time here, but and they're not out yet anyway. But when they do come out, will you come back on the show? We can play the stuff and talk about it?
Absolutely. I would love to, man. Oh, that would be great.
Bitchin'. So no pressure on you. Just when it's ready, just let me know and you come back on. I like the way you know, music is an adventure for you. And so it's not all like rerun rock, you know, like I Love Lucy show or, you know, it's mayonnaise or pizza. Like, you get into these different things and learn from these different people and put yourself in situations. It's really interesting, really inspiring, Jeremy. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, right back. And, you know, to me, a great thing a music cat can do for another music cat is get them happy over music.
Hell yeah, man.
Right? It's like, wow, he's doing that? I want to do that. That's why Double Nickels happened, because Huskers did it as an arcade, you know?
Right. Two of my two iconic and formative records for me, for sure.
But, man. I mean, it wouldn't happen without somebody lighting the fire into the other cat's ass. You know, it's trippy about that. So, thank you so much. Let's keep on keeping on. Okay,
I
can't wait to have
it,
you back on. People, it's January 15, 2024. Dish Wap Pedro should keep your powder dry.